This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 41 with Mari Sauer, founder of M Social Strategies.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Angles of Latitude podcast. This is a show where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing work that matters not only to them, but possibly the rest of the world. Every Thursday, we publish another conversation about the art and science of truly living a life of passion and how you, too, can do the work you're meant to do. I'm your host today, JC Preston. I'm part of the team at New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping creative entrepreneurs do passion-filled work and, more importantly, connecting them with the resources and community they need to help share their message with others. Today's episode is powered by Fizzle. If you've been listening to the show, you know that Fizzle is definitely one of my favorite communities on the web when it comes to building your business. If you're new to the show, you might not have any idea what it is. You know, if you want to make a dent in the universe doing something you care about, then Fizzle.co is your one-stop resource. It's honest training and genuine community for people who are building online businesses. You know, you could scrounge around the web and put together this piece and that piece of information for hundreds, if not thousands, sure. However, at Fizzle, they have video courses that you can learn from just in time. And on top of that, membership costs $35 a month, which again, compared to many of the courses out there, is priced better than fairly well. And remember, as an Angles of Latitude podcast listener, you can get free access to the library and forums for a two-week trial period if you go through newinceptions.com/fizzle, and then you can actually see what it's all about. You'll have enough time to take at least one course and just kind of get a feel for what it's all about in there. So again, you can find out more information by going to newinceptions.com/fizzle. So, hey guys and gals, welcome again to session 41 of the Angles of Latitude podcast. Today, I'm talking with Mari Sauer, who's founder of M Social Strategies, a social media firm out of Chicago. And recently, I got to know Mari through working with Mark Nathan to help get the word out on the book he co-authored. And he hired her to do his social media work for the relaunch of his book. As you've been hearing in recent podcasts, it's been a really fun project to work on. And as this podcast is coming out, this is actually launch week. So if you want to check out the book yet this week or in the future, whenever you might actually hear this, you can do that at thedelusionofpassion.com. In this session with Mari, we talk about her beginnings in the performing arts world, how she eventually got herself working in some of the best hotels in the U.S., and why she thought it would be a good idea for her to start her company, M Social Strategies. We also throw in some things she's learned along the way, including how you can build a consistency in your social media engagement, why she believes that Snapchat is king right now when it comes to showing authenticity, and some of the things she's looking to do with her brand in the not-too-distant future. If you want to follow along at home, you can do so via newinceptions.com/session41. And I'll be back after the conversation to fill in anything we might have missed. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. I'm JC, and I'm glad to have you in this talk with me today. And in case I hadn't mentioned it, I'm actually part of another book launch team, and this time it's with Mark Nathan, who was on session 23, and we're helping him release his book, The Delusion of Passion. And with me today is the social media lead on the team, Mari Sauer. And Mari hails from the East Coast, and she was, in her bio, it says that she was twirling her way through the halls of Marymount as a dance major in New York City. And there is where she fell in love with the hospitality industry and honed skills in high-end restaurant and luxury hotel management. eventually leading to work for the Four Seasons, New York, Maui, and Chicago. So she's kind of been all over the place. She spent some time with many top restaurateurs and chefs in the New York City and Chicago area, later moving on to catering, sales, and event management, where she further developed skills and connections. These connections then led her to work with an eclectic group of small businesses throughout Chicago, including a tech startup. And then in April of 2015, Mari launched M Social Strategies, which is a full-service digital marketing company where she helps businesses navigate and engage with their audience by effectively defining and executing their marketing strategies. So that all said, Mari, welcome to the show. Thanks for being
here.
Hi.
How you doing? Hi. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So that's a heck of a lot of a background, a lot of twists and turns. And, you know, one of the things that I do with all my guests is I kind of go back into the path of how you've gotten to where you are at right now. So, you know, just in case someone wants to be like, okay, just in case someone wants to be like you when they grow up. In quotes,
I don't know about that.
You know, so they can kind of plan a similar route and, you know, maybe not have to necessarily go through some of the weeds that you did. But typically, you know, the more person, the more lives a person lives, the more takeaways people can get from the show. And you know, just from your intro alone, you've had a few lives already. So, you know, let's kind of go back to your schooling. You were a dance major and having gone to Purdue at Purdue. Having gone to school at Purdue, which is a very technical school, I am kind of ashamed to say that I didn't even realize that dancing was a major until I saw real classes for it at Ball State. And I always kind of thought it was something that was taught outside of college, like martial arts or other kinds of sports. Kind of curious on how you chose that as a major. Did you always have an interest in dance?
I did, actually. My mom, at a very young age, I mean, four or five, she was a dancer herself and would, you know, we had an apartment we lived in Norwalk, Connecticut, and there was pretty much no furniture in the dining room area. And she would teach me, she'd, you know, teach me how to sashay and twirl and all kinds of fun stuff across the dining room floor and fell in love. Mm. When we moved to Stratford and they bought their first home or our first home. One of the first things they did when the school season started was enroll me in a dance academy. And that was pretty much the end of that. I was going to be nothing else other than a dancer. I had lots of great loves and my dad had me in baseball team and all kinds of fun stuff, but dance was the end all be all. And you would have to pull me out of that dance floor kicking and screaming if you thought I was going to do something else.
Wow.
So I spent a lot of time there at the studio after school. And I was fortunate enough during my years in high school to get into a program with the University of Bridgeport. I think it was junior year, if I recall, it's been a long time ago, where I had got to leave the school every day and a band would pick us up. A couple of my classmates and I, and we didn't have to take gym at school cause that was just not happening for a dancer.
Right.
And we got to study, and my world opened up to African dance and hip hop and on top of the ballet and the jazz and the modern that I was already taking, with kids from all over Connecticut were being brought to this program at the University of Bridgeport.
Mm, okay.
So it really is when I started seriously thinking that this is what I wanted to do with my, you know, I wanted to go to school to do this. Visited a counselor at school and she opened the road up to me and I knew it was New York City where I was bound to go. And the end is history. I auditioned. I remember my mom and dad driving me in for the auditions, scared, beep, beep, because I never had to do anything like that. And mind you, I competed all my life, all my young life. I went to shows, I performed all the time, but auditioning for something, and I knew I needed a scholarship. I knew that it was something where it wasn't in our family's budget for me to go to school. I was the first, you know, to do that in my family.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big deal. So scholarship and dance and New York City, what more can a girl ask for?
Right. Well, especially at that age. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, my wife still kind of gives me crap here and there about, well, I you know, when I was younger, I wanted to live in a, you know, big city. And I was like, me kind of growing up in rural Indiana, it's like, yeah, well, a lot of us try to stay away from the city as much as possible. So I guess it really kind of depends on where you come from there.
No. Those dance competitions, I'll never forget walking down Times Square after a tournament and being high as a kite on my win, and walking down, we were going to have ice cream, and it was like still the very seedy, you know, Times Square. It wasn't the Disney version of it that it is today. And walking down with my mom and telling her I want to live here one day. And she just like looked down at me and her little 5 foot self and was like, yeah, over my dead body. And, you know, years later, you know, saying I'm going to audition. They weren't going to say no. There was no saying no to me at that point. You know, New York was it, and that was where I was going.
Well, and you know, that brings up an interesting point, because eventually you did get into hotel management, which is definitely a thing at Purdue. I mean, it's the major for that is hospitality and tourism management. So you spent a good part of your life going into dance, focusing in dance, and you were determined as get out to, you know, be up there. And it sounded like you were doing everything right. How did you eventually change directions to hospitality and tourism management?
Well, I think one of the things that we, as when we're young, is that you get so focused and you're so in love with the moment, and dance was my moment. And then you go out and you meet, I had roommates from all over the U.S., dancers from all over the U.S. coming in, actors. It was a fine arts school. It was a theater program. And, you know, I had to make money. I had to pay for those ballet slippers, mm-hmm. those tights. So I had roommates that were a couple years older than me and were working at the Rainbow Room in New York City, which was then run by the Baum Group. And the Rainbow Room, I went there to meet them for cocktails one day, and it's on the top of the 60-something floor of Rockefeller Center. And I fell in love for the second time in my life, dance obviously being the first, and just the glamour and how everything glowed. It's just the beauty of everybody dressed up, the dance floor, the huge orchestra. It was just unbelievable. A couple weeks later, I started working as a coat check, literally with the whole page, the page boy hat, you know, the little uniform, very Rockefeller Center, very NBC Studios kind of feeling to it.
Right.
And eventually one of the maitre d's heard me speaking Spanish to an Italian couple and trying to get by and giving them directions somewhere downtown. And he was like, so he's, how many languages do you speak? Yeah, just Spanish. I'm making that other stuff as I go along. And so he invited me to work in the actual ballroom, and I was just blown away. Hmm. All the waiters wore tails, and they spoke French. And this was the first time I had seen service of that caliber. It was the first time I saw men and women taking pride in their job being waiters. They fine dining, but the sommelier and the host, the maitre d' and his tales, it was just absolutely mesmerizing. And it reminded me so much of dance. It was so, the, you know, 5 o'clock, the curtains go up, the waiters go in, they start their dance, the music is playing, the actors come in, all the diners, and these, you know, 3-4-man teams serving couples for romantic dinners and celebrations. It was amazing. And any chance I got, I sat in corners and I listened to service and the service meetings. And soon enough, I went through the whole works over the next few years, learning how to wait tables and bartend and you name it.
And during all this time, I'm sure you had the song from Beauty and the Beast going on in your head, too.
No, there was a lot of Sinatra, though, for sure. Wow. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I was the worst waitress ever. I mean, as graceful as I was as a dancer, there was this whole thing about holding a tray, talking to people, smiling, all that at once that just was not happening for me. But I did very, very well because I just had a really outgoing personality and just was able to converse and really kind of make connections with people, which is a theme I find going on through my life if when I look back, you know, just being able to connect with people on a very kind of in a very authentic way. And I apologize for using that word. I know it's extremely overused these days.
Oh, no, but it's totally true. And the fact that, you know, when I've seen so many people do it both ways, one where it's very stale, like the professional way. And then there's the more authentic way where, you know, when you think of famous, you know, experts, Pat Flynn and Brendan Burchard are just some of my personal favorite examples. I think that's part of the reason why so many people follow them is because they're so authentic and their message, like yeah. they live, how they present themselves online is who they are, really, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. So yeah, I mean that I slowly fell in love and I just said to myself, well, if I'm going to do this, I only want to do it for the best. Went through a bunch of, stages and eventually got into the hotel side of it in hospitality. It's actually where I met my husband. And that was at the Essex House. It used to be a Nico Hotel. And once I was pulled into that, and just chefs like Delouvrier and just seeing all these amazing people and the art that they were creating, it just soon became, I was obsessed with it. Just the food, the beverage, that, and that was in the 90s. I mean, before we all started really, you know, seeing craft cocktails and, you know, that was like the beginning of boutique beers. That's what they used to call them. Sierra Nevada and that type of thing coming to the market and everybody really, you know, having whiskey tastings and beer tastings and wine tastings, it just was sensory overload. Like yeah. It was just amazing. And yeah, eventually headed to Maui with the Four Seasons. I mean, that was the cream of the crop back then and it still is. It was very small and it was growing quickly. And if you wanted to work for the Four Seasons, your way in was to do it through, you know, one of the resorts. And we both went to the Four Seasons Maui and just was amazing, absolutely amazing, and went through every side of food and beverage, learning the ins and outs and just soaking it up like a sponge, just learning how to really service and connect with people. And it's part of what I come from. It's, you know, customer service is first and foremost. Doesn't matter what your product is, does not matter how shiny and new it is, it does not matter how long you've been open. It doesn't matter any of it. Even to this day, I practice what I preach. It's about customer service and really connecting with people. And that's where the longevity comes in, you know, for any of these people, the Four Seasons of the world, the mom and pop down the street, it's that customer service. That's what people remember in the end.
Yeah. Being very, again, authentic.
Absolutely. Know.
Right. So moving on just a little bit more. You're in Maui. Things are awesome. You're living it up. And again, this is kind of like your second dream realization, right? How do you get Chicago, the Windy City, after already being out in Hawaii? I mean, you were in paradise. And then when you get to Chicago, how do you start working with startups?
You know, let me start off by saying Maui is gorgeous. And now I contemplate wanting to retire there, but a city girl at heart. And in the end, that's why I'm back here. I had a really great team behind what I was doing and that people that really believed in me. And I had a food and beverage director who, he was my food and beverage director in Maui, and he eventually came here to Chicago to work for the Ritz-Carlton Four Seasons property at Water Tower. And I got a call months later from him saying, all right, so the room service manager position is open. And I think, you know, you should, it's you're perfect for it. I'm like, yeah, hell no, like that's not happening. You know, it's like 40 employees and under you and you're doing, it's a very male dominant world at the time. And I wasn't having it, you know, and it was Union Hotel, which I did in New York. So it was a whole nother beast altogether. I was scared. I was really, really scared. And he was just like, no, no, no. I mean, just one of these people that like, you can do this. And my husband stood behind me and he was like, yeah, you totally can do this. So, I came here and started working, living out of the hotel for a couple months and, you know, middle festive season, busy season, October, September, October, 99. And right before Y2K, so all that stuff was on top of us. And everybody was freaking out that the room service, you know, computers are going to go down. And I mean, it was just, it was a crazy hot mess. But from there, I continued working for a couple years. And then I had my son, Eric, and decided, it was funny. We said, well, yeah, after a couple months, you'll go back. It'll be great. And I'm like, yeah. Wimper says to me, my husband, yeah, maybe you'll stay for another year. He's doing so well with you. I'm like, yeah, I like that. Let's do that. 8 years later. So I stayed home, but I was not at peace at staying home. I was involved very heavily at a school, ended up becoming the PTA president, volunteering a lot, doing all kinds of events for them and fundraising and galas, and just did a lot of volunteering and really learned how to work with people on a completely different level. You know, how do you get stuff from people who are working for free?
Right. Oh, yeah.
And how do you make them work and want to work for you and want to, you know, work with you for free? And because you can't yell at them, can't fire them. You can't push them off to the side and say, yeah, you're not worthy. You just have to deal with it and figure it out. And it was a whole new set of skills.
What kind of takeaways did you get from that? I mean, for example, how do you get volunteers to not only show up when they say they're going to show up, but, you know, just do what they're supposed to do?
Honestly, you've got to be able to get your hands dirty too. You can't be sitting there and behaving as the director and pointing and saying, this is it. If you're asking somebody to go out there and clean the grills for the international picnic, then you better make sure you have a nice big old brush and SOS pan in your hand and clean that grill with them. Mm. I really believe that people are willing to follow in general if you're willing to practice what you preach. Mm. You just can't direct. I know there are a lot of people that don't believe that. But you really have to be able to get your hands dirty as well if you expect, especially free.
You have
to expect to get in there and get your hands dirty, get on your knees and do what you got to do.
Servant leadership.
Absolutely.
Love it.
It's what I know. It's how I've grown up. That's the way my parents were. You know, they didn't, you know, we weren't just given chores and go do it. You know, they were right there next to us doing their chores. It wasn't, you know, everything I've ever done. You know, if I want my staff to work with me when I was, you know, running room service, guess who's down there cleaning the hot boxes too? Guess who's serving the food? Guess who's cleaning the tables from the rooms? It's a very, we're all in this together kind of mentality. And I just do better that way. I feel better that way. I can experience, if I experience it that way, then I know what's going on. I know what the pros and cons are of it all.
Nice. So you're in Chicago. You are pretty much going crazy, more than likely, thinking that you want to do something.
Yes.
And you had an option, I'm guessing, between going back to what you knew with the whole hotel management, restaurant, all tourism, all that. And, or you could do something completely new and you opted for the new thing. So how did you get into the startup world?
Well, I actually had started, I broke away from the hotels, and a very big chef here in Chicago, Sarah Stegner, invited me to, her and George Mombaris to, help them out with a restaurant they were opening up here in Chicago. And she's big James Beard Award winner. And I was absolutely did that for a couple years and then went to go work for another restaurant group. And I just came to the realization that I was just too darn old for this. Mm. it's a very young lifestyle. I really was missing having Eric in my, you know, seeing him every day. And that was a problem for me. And I was very fortunate to have a friend who said, you know, come work for us. You know, we started this they start this mobile app, and it was a startup. Then it was VC backed and all kinds of fun stuff. And I was like, yeah, I don't know anything about technology. Never mind. You know, I don't know what you're talking about. She's like, you don't need to know that. It's, you know, more than you know, is what she kept saying to me. And then she said, you know, selling is selling, and that's what you're good at. And her and who the both of them ended up becoming my bosses, John was very in, you know, he's like, you're very good at what you do. I don't know, you know. And so slowly, the whole principle behind it was to, the application was for both small businesses to be able to market their, you know, their wares, their events on their own without no middleman on an app, mm-hmm. whenever they wanted, all location based, and a consumer to be able to hear what they wanted from the businesses that they liked, as opposed to just getting, you know, here's my husband getting nail salon offers. Why does he need that? So this was really targeted and, you know, what? Location-based, and it was my job to sign the businesses on.
What,
so
what,
body, go ahead.
What year was that, if you don't mind me asking?
So 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, not two, three, 4 years ago.
Because I always thought it would be kind of cool for something like that to be with like a Google Glass or something, and you start seeing all this kind of like the VR, you know, stuff yeah. starting to come down the pathway now. And as you're walking down a road, you know, you see these little blips on your screen there in front of you. And it's just like you're walking down the street and you see the street, and then all of a sudden to your right, little icon comes down on this store
yeah.
to your right. And it's, you know, it's like, and you just interact with it, and it's like, oh yeah, well, we definitely want to go here because I have this on my notes to go check this out, sort of thing. So
yeah,
I can see where that's going.
It was very cool. The app itself was very cool. Being able to be a consumer walking down the street, and anytime I'm a certain mileage that I set away from, let's say, Sarah Jane's in Old Town, then, you know, and she happens to have, you know, sweaters on sale from by Nanette Lepore, then, and I want to hear about it. It's gonna let me know. It was really cool. And, you know, over that first year and a half, we ended up doing close to 250 businesses signed up. A lot of that myself. We had some interns at a time, and then my boss John, he was very much practice what you preach kind of guy as well, out in the streets with us. So it was a lot of fun. It was, and eventually they were going to rebrand, and the question was posed, you know, you're welcome, these are clients that, you know, you started to work with, and if you'd like to, you know, they're yours. And I had to, you know, kind of think about it. Do I put an application out there and start putting my resume together and go out there and try to compete with all the 20, 30 somethings on social media strategies from a 44-year-old? Yeah, I don't know about that. Like, it was just, it was more my roadblock, in my mind saying yeah. that I was incapable or worthy of that type of job. You know, I just...
Well, and exactly, because, you know, I just released today a guy by the name of Eric Deckers, who was a big deal here in Indy before he moved to Orlando. As far as social media goes, he wrote one of the first Twitter marketing books out there, and that was back in 2009, 2011 or something. And we were joking on that show, like, you know, the second round of books, the writers would know about him probably because they got a lot of his stuff. But as far as all the 20 something year olds, yeah, they have no idea who he is. And he's like, yeah, I've been doing this ever since it was a thing. And
yeah.
it's just kind of funny. So.
Before it was a thing.
Yeah, exactly. Because no, and it was because he was a writer. He was a writer, and he's always had that knack for being able to help other people. So, I mean, I guess you kind of like he was able to bring the whole writing thing into it. You've been able to bring the whole sales and psychology side of into what you do with M Social Strategies now, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty amazing, all of it. It's this road and just launching, and yeah, still freak out every single day.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, literally just had a freak out this morning, so I'm like, what? What's due? Yeah.
So yeah, that was my bad. No.
Oh no, not you. I mean, that's just my common. Like, what? I didn't pack you a lunch.
Yeah.
Wait, but did you get food somewhere else? Like, it's just my. It's an everyday occurrence. It is what it is.
But yeah, I mean, you've invented yourself so many different times, and I got to ask, what did you feel that, you know, was put a time. You had to put a line in the sand and say, this is what I want to do on my own as far as business. I mean,
that was pretty much last year. I mean, it was really one of those things where, again, was going through, am I going to put this resume out? Am I going to have to work for somebody with everything I bring to the table, even not realizing what all that was at the time? How can I work for somebody younger with half the knowledge, because that's really what was going to end up happening because, you know, truth be told, that's where a lot of the social media and the digital strategy comes from. So it was really one of those things saying, you know, hey, can I do this on my own, and being realistic about it.
Mm-hmm.
And to be completely honest, it was a big F yeah.
Nice.
And I'm totally taming the cursing here, by the way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, you come from New York.
And Puerto Rican. I mean, it's either that or it's coming out in Spanish, and a couple of the German ones my husband's taught me. So yeah. it was this very kind of enlightening moment. Yeah, I can do this. And then that was it. There was no stopping me. I was going to do it. I mapped it all out, and my scariest moment was saying to Winfred, okay, this is what I want to do. And he's a very numbers kind of guy. It was one of those things where he was just, you just don't say I'm going to do something and he's going to be like, okay, good luck. You know, he's very much like, I mean, the look of concern just like is like a screen that comes over his face. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to present, you know, everything and explain it to him so that he's completely on board.
Mm.
And even then, I don't think he was, you know, maybe 75-80%. Not that I ever think that he doubted me. I just think, you know, it's money. At this point, it's not we're down a salary, right?
Right.
And you want to go start a business? you realize the taxes are due, right? So, yeah, and really tightening our belts. And that was really my concern. This is X number of accounts I need in the next 30 to 60 days in order to come to this point where we're not like starving and the mortgage isn't being paid,
right?
In order to supplement the salary he makes. So that was really my first goal. Not can I do this or can I? I'm like, okay, I need to make money. If this is going to happen, I need to make money. And this is the way it's going to happen. And it has to happen by June 1st.
Hmm. So walk me through the process. So you're a freelancer. And you have clients, and do you meet them online? Do you meet them in networking events? Do you meet them for the most part through other people? How does that work?
I have to be honest, every single one of the clients I have right now has been a referral. Mm-hmm. I do belong to a networking group that I go to every Thursday, like clockwork. We are there an hour and we exchange all females. That's one of the reasons why I even decided to have the cojones to go in there and start this business. Cause all these women, they were just absolutely amazing and empowering, and they were all entrepreneurs. And I'm like, holy crap, they're like half my age. I could totally do this.
Mm.
So, you know, a lot of them come from referrals, folks who have known me. Mm-hmm. And my very first client was in that group, who came with me from the startup, and she was my biggest cheerleader. And soon enough, everybody here knew, you know, they knew what I was doing, and I started getting clients from them. And then on Facebook, on a Facebook group that I was invited to, here at local Chicago group, people started seeing my work and decided, you know, you really should use this person and, you know, talk to her. And that kind of happened. And slowly but surely, I built my list, and, you know, it's a one-man team. I do have, just recently in the last couple months, brought on a freelance writer to help me out with curating content. It's a lot of clients that I have full service, so it's a lot to do. And then things happen, like seasonality and, you know, festival season, and I pick those up, those kind of, you know, clients up. And so it's a lot to do with one person, and I do a lot. So there's a lot of value add to what I do. It's not just going out there and curating content. I write blogs, I write their newsletters, I design them. Wow. You name it. I do. Yeah. I'll go to photo shoots with them. I'll take pictures. I'm definitely, my whole purpose is, they're solopreneurs. A lot of them, they've got 20 hats, and I'm going to take 10 of them from them and hope that.
And then multiply that for me and multiply that by 4 or 5 and
Try 28. So yeah, I do a lot, and just recently, like I said, I brought somebody that does curating for me. Mm-hmm. But I still write and take care of a lot of it on my own, which can be, you know, there's part of me at a very young age was told I was a perfectionist, and I would get very upset. That sounds like a bad word to me. Yeah. And I am a perfectionist, and to a fault, and but I very much treat each one of the businesses that I have on as clients as they were my own businesses. So I'm not going to put something out there that's not worthy of my own business, you know?
And as far as, you know, getting them to, let's just say that so you talk to this person, mm-hmm. and they say that you kind of do a discovery session with them, right? So you're going to kind of do a, you know, this is the stuff that they're having problems with. You kind of check out everything that they're currently doing. And then how you just basically say, okay, so if you're having issues with this, you kind of itemize, I'm guessing, right? And then you just kind of give them a quote. And if they're interested, they'll be like, sure, sort of thing. And that's how you get a client, right?
Sort of. I actually have packages that I've set out.
You're a package person.
Yeah,
see?
I'm a package
person. Nice, I like that.
So it ranges from just social media, mm-hmm. whether it's just one channel and starting it up for them and getting them going for a few months, to full service clients where it's the entire thing. They get a blog or two a month posted, they get a newsletter, their daily content on several channels, including Instagram, Pinterest, all of it. And then I have clients where I just provide a strategy. Once a month, and I call them quarterly clients because I meet with them. I sit down with them for the quarter, and we discuss what's going on, the trends, how the strategy has been in the past. And then each month, I actually give them a blueprint day by day. Go here, do this, take this, do that, use these hashtags. And I provide that once a month, and they go 1 hour a week, and they... you know, I teach them how to use schedulers and all kinds of fun tools to make the job easy. So that's perfect for people with idle time, you know?
So in other words, you're kind of assigning their power hour to them.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
I'm keeping them accountable, you know, like here it is. And I go in there. It's not like, here we go. Here's your monthly thing. See you next month. Mm-hmm. I go in once a week. I follow them on their social channels. I make sure they're doing things. I call them out when it doesn't look good, when an image needs to get taken down. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, and then I give them tips every month. So new tools to use. And then, you know, fun new little kind of technique or strategy to incorporate into their weekly or monthly strategy, and make sure that they're up to date with their covers and all kinds of fun stuff, teaching them how to use BitLinks. And, you know, it's an ongoing process. It's just, I don't have to do the actual everyday content writing. It right. comes from them. It's their voice. Right. And I like that type of client. And then go ahead.
So you keep going back to what you were saying before, that, you know, for your age, you know, this was like a handicap for you. And to me, you're talking in a world that I understand, but yeah, like you have a lot of a great, sounds like you know exactly what you're doing. So that being said, like BitLinks and knowing all this stuff. I mean, how do you keep everything straight? You know, and because again, I mean, what you have, probably under 10 clients, I'm guessing, to keep it all straight, right?
at a time? 28 clients.
You have 20?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Geez. So how did you pick up the skill set to manage all that?
I am, like I said before, a sponge. I read everything that's coming to me. Sometimes it's to a fault. I have to actually turn it all off because I feel that I'm so influenced by all these, do this, don't do that. You know, you don't use that SEO. SEO is king. SEO is not king. You know, there's so much stuff out there now. So I am my client. My client is sitting there and she's hearing that and she's reading that. She's like, holy crap. Am I supposed to use a link for this? Am I supposed to tie it in from, you know, Instagram to Facebook? Should I not share it from Twitter? Like, for me, it's practicing it every day. Mm-hmm. It's reading everything that's out there. I pick, you know, 5 to 10 industry leaders, and these are the folks that I go and I listen to. Their podcasts, I read their blogs. I, you know, sit on their whatever they've got going on. Lessons, I've taken classes. You name it. And when I don't know something, I'm not going to lie to you about it. I don't know it, but guess what? I am one of those people that's willing to jump in and learn it. There are a lot of people that will shut the door down. If they don't know it, that's it. Sorry, I don't do that. You'll have to go to somebody else for that. If I can keep it all in one place so that she, and I refer to she because a lot of my clients end up being females, that she can set it and forget it, or know that, hey, she's got this, she knows it. And if she doesn't know, she's figuring it out. Mm-hmm. I want them to be able to trust the fact that if I don't know it, I'm going to figure it out for them. And a lot of it's just reading. I mean, I spend a lot of time on Sundays. It's my me time. And the greatest invention of all is clippers for Evernote and Facebook save button. Because I save everything. Go Sunday, I'll sometimes even see, oh, that was an interesting article. It was so interesting, I saved it in 3 different places because I didn't realize, you know, coming across. But I do. I read a lot, and I take, you know, these industry experts, for the most part, are there for a reason. They're there to educate and make all the crazy tech talk a little bit easier for us to consume.
Mm, right. Yeah. So most companies, unless they have content or a marketing manager in-house, are pretty sporadic, to say the least. You know, they probably only look out, what, maybe a week at a time if they're lucky, and might be covering a good part of their bases. That's if they're on it. What do you normally see when you come in?
I see a lot of things, but the biggest thing is inconsistency, not just with posting, but lack of branding or consistent branding. Aesthetically, things don't look good. And really, that's the first to the naked eye, to the virgin eye. It's as far as social media is concerned or email marketing. Aesthetically, things need to look inviting, just like anything you put on your dinner plate. Mm-hmm. Those peas will look much yummier if you put some lemon zest and some mint on them. It's the same thing with your social media. You need to add a little lemon zest to make it look pretty. I mean, the branding has to be in place, links that make sense, spelling, grammar, just simple things in life that we, you know, when you were writing a paper in high school, the things that, you know, that doesn't look very neat, your handwriting looks like crap, you know, those little things, if you carry those type of lessons over to the way your social media or email, your anything, your images, it's a blurry image. Why the heck are you putting that up there? That makes no sense.
Or
just
pixelated.
Because it's, yeah, yeah. Like seriously, people, is that something you would put on your wall? Literally your wall in your living room. Would you put a pixelated picture on your wall in your living room? So why would you put it out there for the rest of the world to see on Facebook like that? Mm-hmm. Your logo. If you don't have one, get a clean font and then use that font consistently. To me, that's key. Stay on brand. If you look confused about what your brand is supposed to be, then guess what that message is out there to the rest of the public, to all your followers, to all the people, the consumers. When you send mixed messages out, that's what's going to come back to you. Mixed messages. And mixed messages means they're not buying things from you. They're not buying anything. They're not even buying a bag of peas from you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's really the biggest, you know, just tying it all together. It's funny, a lot of them, when you first bring them on, the first couple weeks after the first month, when you sit down with a client, they're like, everything looks so great. Because that's the first thing they see. It looks so great. I haven't even gotten the voice down yet, but at least there's some consistency straight off the bat. And there's, it's visually appealing. People want to come to this page then. It looks good. And then once they get there, how am I going to keep them there?
Wow.
Consistent posting.
Yeah. Huh. Wow. So you're not only a marketing manager, you're a content manager.
Can I come back next week too, so you can pat me on the shoulder a little bit more?
You're a brand manager.
But here's the thing. This is not what I set out to do. There are people out there that are pretty amazing. They went to school to do this. They do this. And I'm not saying that I'm any better. What does it look like? If it looks like crap, it is crap. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is. It's very basic. And I really, really try. If that's how I see it, that's how I want them to see it. How does it look to you? How do you want to come off across here? Your client, the next girl who sits in your chair for your haircut, the next woman to walk across, you know, the restaurant and sit down and have a meal. How do you want that to come across? Do you want it to be like, you know, you're inviting them to your home? This is, you know, shove the stuff under the bed and make sure everything looks presentable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's key. So we were just touching on consistency. And one of the things that I've noticed about you is that you really, again, appreciate it. And if someone is still a solopreneur, how can they improve on their own in this specific thing? Because one of the things I've noticed is that consistency usually is the first thing that gets thrown out the door, especially when it comes to marketing. Like, many might have a regular email, newsletter, but social media, I mean, you're lucky to get like a few posts a day, maybe, if that's what they're supposed to be doing. I mean, what are some hacks that you would say that can help them with consistency?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, the last form of clients that I recently started picking up were clients that want to do it themselves. They really are into it. They just don't even know where to start, or they don't have the time to do it consistently. So one of the things that I go in is teach them how to get on a scheduler, get yourself, you know, create yourself a homework list. This is how, and organize yourself. I am a huge proponent of schedulers. The idea with schedulers is, you know, I can sit down for the hour, I create my content for the week, and get yourself a week ahead. So you're not even thinking about the week that you're currently in. You're thinking about the following week. And you've already had your marketing strategy for the month. You know what's going on. And you get on that scheduler and you post for the week and take an hour. And then when stuff pops up last minute, you know, oh my God, it's raining out, I want to put umbrellas up for sale. That stuff can happen spur of the moment without freaking out that it has to be perfect. And people really are scared to put out there. They're scared to try. You know, if you take that hour, maybe 2 hours tops, once a week, and you're very thoughtful about it, and you really sit down, how am I talking to, I want to sell that umbrella. Mm-hmm. How am I going to sell it to my girlfriend? What am I going to tell her about that umbrella? And really open it up like a conversation. When you do that, it flows from you. There's no hesitation. It's your voice.
Yeah.
So that's my biggest key takeaway is get yourself on a scheduler. There's tons of them out there. They help you curate content. They help you with the links. You don't even have to worry about it. There's lots of fun stuff out there.
I'm gonna share this with you. You were talking about an umbrella. Well, Mike Rowe, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but with Dirty Jobs.
Yes.
But and this is really cool session that you should listen to, the almost two and a half hours on Tim Ferriss. But he was talking about how he got his job on QVC, and he was given a pencil. And he was supposed to talk about the pencil for 10 minutes.
I love it.
And, you know, basically what he said was not so much the, you know, what you can use it for, but start going into like stories of like the color and how it was made and, you know, the craftsmanship into the making and like the specific kind of color that it is and how, what kind of, you know, plants or whatever they might have to use to create the dye
I
for the
it.
Color and all that sort of stuff. And he was, I mean, it's just, if you can do that, then you keep people's attention again in a story. And the more of a story that you hear, it's like, ah, that's, and that's how he's been able to, do so well over his lifetime, because he's such a storyteller. So if you can involve storytelling into your sales, then
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think when people understand that, I'm a person who, I think it's because the way I understand things, I always need to kind of refer back to something else. You know, it's always the, when somebody asks you, so what does that taste like? Well, it kind of tastes like, you know, that's how I explain things to people. I'm always giving a reference point. And I think that when I sit down with them and they're like, well, you know, this is the kind of client I have. I'm like, that's great. That's the kind of client you have, but what are you trying to sell them? What are you trying to tell them? How are you going to tell them? How would you tell your mom at a dinner table? How would you tell your girlfriend?
Right.
That's how you're going to tell them, invite them into that story. They're going to fall in love with your product and fall in love with you when you're really authentic about it and really transparent about how you got there.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. And again, you know, I was talking about the other two, and I would say that Mike Rowe is probably definitely one of the most authentic people that I regularly follow. So yeah. Authenticity is definitely key. So, moving on real quick. You know, you're currently doing stuff with Mark, and you got, again, 28. I still can't believe you have 28.
Not all of them are full. Not all of them are full.
Yeah, but
half of them are. Yes.
Yikes. what kind of stuff is currently, I mean, giving you a high with working with these people? What are you excited about these days?
I'm excited. I actually have two clients who, in particular, who are very much, very good at what they do. They're service oriented. They're solopreneurs. And they're slowly both evolving into lifestyle brands or trying to.
Mm-hmm.
That journey is pretty darn amazing. Like, to watch what's going on and how they transition. They're both fairly young. And I love it. I feel like a parent. You know, and like, just kind of watching them evolve. One of them has been with me for 4 years. She transitioned with me, and the other one's a year and a half now. And just watching them really kind of, you know, not really understanding where they were very set, and they knew where they wanted their business to go. But to see how they're translating that on the internet, on their blogs, because now they both have blogs, and they have Instagram followings now, and one of them starting to use Snapchat more often. And I mean, that's a whole nother story on its own.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Hello. I have a tech team, and his name is Eric, and he's 14. He's the one who taught me how to use Snapchat on the couch one Sunday afternoon.
I know how to use it. I'm just still struggling with the whole intention behind it. Like, I understand Snapchat to a point where I understand all the buttons are, I understand all the swipes, I understand, you know, basically the full functioning of it, but because it doesn't hold a story for more than 24 hours, I honestly see it as a distraction.
Oh, see, I don't see it like that at all. I see that the epitome of authenticity.
Mm.
I mean, maybe it's just the people I follow and, but seeing them on their day to day and just, you know, being goofy. I mean, there are some people that I have been following on Instagram or Facebook for, you know, a couple of years now, and watching them build their brand and, you know, but it's these snapshots, and that's what it is. Now I see them cussing and dropping their ice cream cone when they're middle of a photo shoot. Mm-hmm. I see them burning their pasta when they're making it. Like, there's something behind there that now has, I'm much more in love with their brand, much more in love with them. I'm itching to go back there and see what else they've got going on. What restaurants did they, I'm constantly saying to my son, this dude eats a lot, man, in 24 hours. Like, Like, it's just this, the curiosity, the natural curiosity, it's peaked with Snapchat. And the way that those folks are transitioning that into their brand, driving more traffic to their Instagram, to their Facebook, to their blogs, in a very subtle kind of way, they're doing it right. Gary Vee is perfect. I mean, he's constantly in an airport or on a street or working out or eating a damn banana. that's what he does on Snapchat all the time. But I can't look away. I cannot look away at that next banana that he shoves in his mouth. there's something about it that's captivating. And you know what? I got to tell you, it becomes a great inspiration. It's like, hey, look what he's doing, or look what she's doing. How do I now incorporate that into my own strategy or into my clients? Or, hey, you know what's new and big and up and coming? Let's try this. It just really kind of, it's a motivator. It's an inspiration. It's very inspirational to me to go in there and check out what's going on at the end of the day and have a giggle and, you know, just have fun with it. It's very relaxed. And my son constantly is telling me not to do things like, yeah, mom, don't do that. And for him, it's a completely different thing. You know, it's about keeping your story going, or I don't even know what they call it, where he's just with the people he's following, that he has to make sure that there's a streak. That's what it is. It's a streak.
Again, I know what you're talking about. It's just like, I personally, again, it's just like, and why?
Yeah, and
I mean, again,
it's getting people to know you, fall in love with your brand. Eventually, guess where they're going to go see you? Guess where it's driving you home? Just like every other channel,
It's
driving you home. Home is the website. Home is the brand. You know, it's the storefront. It's the restaurant. It's doing the same thing. It's just doing it in a very kind of incognito kind of way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's good to see that perspective. I just, you know, Gary just keeps on calling it the land grab, and I can understand why he calls it the land grab.
Well, he's hysterical. Seriously. There's some people on there though I've had to unfollow, just, you know, some brand or, you know, that are taking it too. It's too much.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my God, I got to be on here. I got to do stuff. You know, we don't need to see all of that. We just don't put that away.
So we'd already talked about what you're already doing. And what you're excited about, what, you know, helping your, the two, proteges, so to speak, maybe.
Oh yeah.
but what personally are you looking forward to in developing in your brand?
The age old question. I am just having, and I think we've talked about this in the past. It's the, how do I scale? I mean, there's just not too many more over 23, 24 that I can do. How do I scale? How am I able to touch more people, help them out, help them streamline their process so that they're not so overwhelmed? How can I be there for other people without, you know, just watering myself down?
Mm-hmm.
I did start, and this is something I've started working on the last couple months, where I am doing that teaching piece where I take 3 hours, and do like a very digital marketing 101 and teach them the tools to get them down to 2 hours a week,
mm-hmm.
Sit down and kind of, you know, get them on track. And then there are 3 more courses that follow, and they're all 3 hours, and we sit down and they can take them as they want. Or as much time as they need in between. There's no pressure. You're not signed up for, you know, all 4 at once. It's just putting it in their hands to be able to do it. And once they get the taste that I can do this in 2 hours and they work on that or an hour a week, then we can slowly start adding other vehicles. And it's the same process that I take with the current clients that are full-time, where we only started with just vamping up their social media, getting them on brand, added the email newsletter, transition that email newsletter to a blog. The blog is now 2-3 times a month. I do everything in stages. One, just so that they don't become overwhelmed and they just kick me in the teeth and are like, what the heck? Get out of here, lady. You're crazy. but also for myself, because my sanity needs to remain intact for everybody else.
Right.
So everything to me, if you do it in baby steps, it's completely doable. And that's how I I like to teach. So I've had a couple clients this way. I have three more in the pipelines. I've actually put a hold on taking full-time clients. I promised these folks that I have already that I'm going to give them my best work. And if I keep, again, taking more clients on that are full-time, I'm watering it down.
Yeah.
So I water myself down, and that's not my best work, and that's not good for anybody, including myself. So a lot of it's this teaching, and it's so far it's been really successful, and I'm kind of liking it, going in there and feeling like the big, you know, like, crap, these are folks that are like my age and just like, okay, we need to know social media. We need to know how to do email newsletters. What's the timing? How do I do it? I got four kids, a diaper. Like, what? How do I get my Facebook on track? You know, and I feel like I come in there and I can, you know, ha ha ha, blow on my nails, you know, polish them up and be like, yeah, let me show you how to do this. You're going to kick yourself for not realizing that it could be this easy.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I like that. Moving on to the rapid fire questions. First one, or what are three things you'd want people to remember you by after hearing you on the show today?
That I'm approachable, for sure. Hopefully they do get that buzzword again, in their face that I am an authentic person. And, I'm pretty knowledgeable. I'm not saying I know it all, but, I'm willing to, you know, give it a go and try new things. And hopefully folks out there aren't scared. And I kind of let the universe take what it's supposed to take, what it gives me, and let it happen. That's really how I live my life. And I think it's the best way to live your life. Just kind of let things happen as they may, the direction it's meant.
Cool. Next two. That was an authenticity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, two more. Let's see. That I'm funny. That I'm really, really funny. let's see. What else to take from me? That, you know, that it doesn't matter how old you are. You're constantly learning. That's what I'm doing now. And I don't think this is my last chapter in my book. I feel like there's more chapters coming, and I'll probably reinvent myself one more time. So I'm constantly reinventing myself. That's a great another thing to take away from them. And I think that helps everybody that I serve as well.
Cool. Nice. Three favorite teachers, experts, or influencers that you have enjoyed over the years?
I recently discovered Gary Vee in the last year. So he is somebody he is no nonsense, no holds bar. I'd like to think of myself as the female version of him, because I can cuss like and be just as crazy. And I'm going to tell you like it is. And I'm very much like that with my clients. I tell them right from the beginning, this is how I am. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything for you. If it looks like shit, I'm going to tell you it looks like shit. Sorry.
But he's from Jersey, though, too.
Yeah, but so. I'm from Connecticut. Same difference. Listen, I lived in Jersey. It was in Jersey City and Hoboken. It's all rubbed off on me. Don't worry. another person this was more of when I started to kind of more discover myself and not being so scared of who I am. And this was, her name is Stephanie St. Clair. She runs Bliss Bomb. And I absolutely love her. Just really just taking a look at yourself, and each week just coming back to that home place. And did I do things that I really wanted to do this week that made me happy, that served my purpose? And if I didn't, what are those things and how can I remove them from my life? How do I step away from that and then add more joy into my life? And I think that that's something I really learned from her, and constantly watching her and just being happy and being this really proud woman, that I can do anything that I set my mind to. I didn't believe that for a long time. I didn't believe it was possible. I didn't think that if anybody that knows me is listening, they're like, oh, great, she's going to cry now. I am quite weepy at times, and this is one of them, because really discovering myself was a big deal, and being able to be that person that was inside wanting to, you know, come out and just kind of putting a blanket over it always, was, you know, she was a very big in that development.
Hmm. Nice.
And then another great teacher for me, I guess last one, was my mom. We didn't always have like the greatest relationship growing up. But, you know, she's a very tell it like it is kind of gal. And, you know, and although there's, you know, been times where I've just learned a lot from her. She's always been a go-getter at a very young age, continued to go to school and had us and just didn't stop pursuing her dreams. You know, she just wasn't going to stop. And she went in and she was, you know, learned how to be an accountant and worked for the same company now for the last 26 years and just grew through the ranks. I mean, that just perseverance, and that's pretty much her. And she's this little 5 foot spit of a person. Just, I think I've learned a lot of that from her. I learned a lot of that from her. And, you know, just like a lot of women in my life, and there are a lot of girlfriends, you know, that are out there and really breaking that mold of that we should all be, you know, in our 40s and home and kids and that's what you do and that's that. No, these women are having it all. They're out there and they're raising their kids and they're opening up their own businesses and they are kicking butt left and right. And I am very proud to call them my friends and to be one of them.
Or as Gary would say, crushing it. Cool.
Crushing it. Yes. Yeah. Crushing it. I'm not going to take that though, because that's his.
Yeah. Yeah. If you wanted to put an ad into the world, what would the message be and where would you deliver it?
Well, since we're all on our mobile phones, where do you think it should be delivered? you know, they're friends of mine, or even just myself. I tell myself everything that's in it. It's so cliche, but it truly is something that I probably say at least the very least once a day. But if it's, I really truly believe that everything happens for a reason. You know, I was a dancer, went to New York for a reason, and that brought me to restaurant business and all those things over the years, all those different jobs and all those different verticals, all of them brought me to where I am today. And I'm sure this is a part for the future. Everything happens for a reason. I truly and utterly, with every piece of my body and my being, believe that. The bad, the good, the ugly, the inspiring, all of it happens for a reason. It's all part of the process. It's all a part of what you're becoming, what you're supposed to be, the gift that you have for the world.
Mm-hmm. The universe telling you one way or another that, yeah, you're supposed to.
Yeah.
You might not have been a, especially, you know, and that which is very, you know, you were making me kind of think there as you were saying that. I was thinking back to my days at Purdue and just thinking about all the different Asian kids that would commit suicide because they weren't able to, you know, be the engineer at such a young age, really, and they weren't cutting it in their classes and things like that. And you know, I know that's a little extreme, but the truth of the matter is, I've seen some. There's one guy in particular that his parents wanted him to go to school and be an engineer, and he did that. He got that degree, but now he got a master's in education, and I think he got a doctorate in something else. And now he's teaching, which is completely different than the future that they had, you know,
because that's what the universe had planned for him. That's exactly. Just the way it is. It's so funny. There's so many of us, including myself, and I'm sure you could totally attest to it. We on a daily basis fight what's in front of us because that's not the way it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And if we really, truly sit down, take a deep breath and just let it be, let things happen. It's, you know, I just truly believe that even with the day-to-day work that I do, if I'm not feeling it, I'm not feeling it. If the creative isn't flowing, it's for a reason. It's listening and stopping and listening to yourself and listening to what's going on. And you know, the best work will come out and your best self will come out when you really take a moment to take a deep breath and listen to what's going on inside.
So is that what you would say to your 25-year-old self or what would you say?
Actually, it's funny. I used to think that I would tell her that stop screwing around, but I wouldn't tell her that now. I'd say, go play some more, go experience, go travel the world, bring that back. You know, I would tell her that. I think I was so scared to experience, you know, I was like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to go out. I'm supposed to, you know, get this college education. I need to go go get married. I need to, you know, have kids, live this way and do that. That's what everybody says you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Stop listening to everybody. Really? Little Maddie, stop listening to everybody else. Little Maddie, go listen to yourself. Sit down. What do you truly want to do? And even if you don't know, just stop listening to everybody else, because nobody else knows your story. Only you do.
When you think of the word success, who comes to mind and why?
I think about success. You know, I'm gonna be very like, I honestly think about somebody like my child, like Eric, my son. He's only 14, but here's this kid, you know, he's 4 years old and he's teeny, teeny, tiny, and he's little. He's kind of like under the radar on how small he is. And he started taking judo classes, and, you know, judo is not about the size of the person in front of you, right? It's about how you leverage what's in front of you. And he just worked his butt off, like, over the years, and anything that he does, he's always incredibly successful at it. To him, nothing's a challenge. Like, it's hard. He'll tell you it's hard, but it doesn't faze him. And to me, that's the epitome of success. And I cannot wait to see where he's going to go in his life, because whatever it is he wants to do or does, he's going to be incredibly successful, because he is now at this little age and he's so nonchalant about it. And I love that. I love seeing that kind of open eyed and soaking it in. I think if we could all take a bit of that with us ourselves as we go on through our day to day lives, just kind of experiencing things and letting them happen, I think we all could be successful.
Yeah. Touche. I like that. That's good. That's good. Just work hard and success will come, right?
Yeah. Work hard, let it happen. Enjoy life. I mean, truly, I think it's one of the biggest faults we all have as adults is that we're working so hard that we forget to enjoy life, thinking that we'll have time later on. And then all of a sudden a Sunday comes and you're like, crap, Monday's tomorrow. I didn't do anything. You didn't go out. You didn't smell the grass and all those pretty new leaves that just came out. It was 80 degrees all week long. I didn't know it because I was sitting in air conditioning, going out there, just experiencing life and knowing that it's not all about work, because the rest of it's not going to come back later on you don't get extra days added to the end because you didn't use them.
Well, as we're finishing up, I've got two more things for you. The first one is, if someone were wanting to improve their social media and online marketing presence, what are four keys or steps you would suggest that they get started on as soon as possible?
Go and take a look at whatever channel you want to work at. Find out, you know, if you have them all already, just make sure they're all consistent across the board. You know, consistency is key. Make sure your branding is on point. Whether you get somebody to do a logo for you, or you quickly put some, you spell out the word and pick your font of choice and color of choice, just make sure it's consistent, whatever it is, across the board. You don't want people confused on where they're going, and you want the message to stay the same across all the channels. That's really, really important. And just really get yourself on a system. Once a week, go grab Hootsuite or Buffer or whatever it is, and put 5 posts up there. That's it. Start with 5 Facebook posts. And then next week, add 3 Twitter posts. And the week after that, get yourself Latergram and add 2 Instagram posts. And then slowly, once that becomes easier, you add one more. Baby steps. You know, it's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to go away if you don't post it tomorrow. Just baby steps, and just put out there what you're going to say to your girlfriend, your mom, your dad, whoever you're trying to explain your business or sell whatever it is that you're trying to sell. Just pretend they're your family, your friends. Talk to them.
Nice. And if people are wanting to connect with you, what's the best ways of doing that?
I take text messages, but we don't want that happening. That's interruptive. let's try M Social Strategies. I have a great website. There's contact information on there. You can send me a quick message. You can definitely send me a message on Facebook, Instagram, wherever I am, M Social Chai on Instagram. And if you're on that Snapchat and you want to see some really silly stuff from me, then go ahead and do that. Again, M Social Chai. I'm going to forewarn you, I am not good at it. And I always pick the ugliest filters.
All right. Well, Mari, thanks so much for coming on today.
Oh, thank you.
Definitely a pleasure.
It was fun being here. Thank you.
Great. All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mari. If it sounds like you'd be interested in working with her, feel free to find her on her website at msocialstrategies.com. As usual, all the information that you need for today's show is at newinceptions.com/session41, including the show note extras. In the show note extras for this session, I have a few supplemental videos and other resources that refer to some of the topics we discussed today. The first one I want to share with you guys is a video of Gary Vee predicting how Snapchat is going to be huge this year, 2016, amongst other topics. In this particular Ask Gary Vee episode, which was, I believe, number 13. Also, if you want to figure out Snapchat, which I still am at the publishing of this session, you can do just that via Cliff Ravenscraft's Snapchat tutorial. And if you don't know who Cliff is, he's definitely someone I would suggest you start paying attention to if you want to do a podcast. His website is called podcastanswerman.com, so definitely check that out if you want to get some good information there. The next on the list is another video of Gary, and this time he's with Marie Forleo, and this particular video was from 2013, and they were talking about the future of social media marketing. And for those of you who might not be too familiar with Gary, 2013 was also the year that he published his book, Jab, 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 Right Hook, which I actually still carry around in my computer case that I, you know, strapped to my shoulder. And this book, while not completely up to date, still has a ton of value in it. So definitely check that out if you're interested in getting your social media strategy started on the right foot. The final resource that I have for you today is a recent session of Pat Flynn's podcast, and in it he interviews his new content manager that he brought on a couple of months ago, I want to say. And some of the things that she says that she helps Pat with are pretty useful tips and tricks that, as solopreneurs, we can actually use to schedule our content with. And you got to remember that, you know, Pat has a big team now. Well, not big, I mean a handful of helpers, but he still asks her, how can people doing this by themselves still implement this material? So definitely check it out if you're looking to schedule your content ahead of time, which I highly recommend doing. Even, I would say, do it before you start a business or a new website. So that way you're already for posts ahead of time. But definitely check out why and how to actually get that done and why, you know, it's just for. And that'll be in the show notes as well. Be sure to join me again as I'm really, really excited to bring on next week's guest, Alessandra Colacci. And Alessandra has tons of experience in the online world. And in fact, back in the MySpace days, yes, MySpace, she had millions of visits coming to her first business, Blingy Blob. And since then, she's been doing pretty well and even starting a new company in 2015 called Influence Buzz. And if you're wondering about all this live social media stuff, including Periscope, Facebook Live, and Blab.im, yes, that's a thing, then you'll definitely want to check out this session as we get down and dirty about what they all are and why she took the plunge to make them a huge part of her new business. You know, it's a real eye-opening chat that I think you'll probably get a few tactic takeaways from, as well as some of the usual mindset tips. And with that all said, that about wraps things up today. And again, be sure to check out the show notes at newinceptions.com/session41. And until next time, dig in, have fun, and take care. And we'll see you next week.
for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web at newinceptions.com.